Hello and welcome to the Truth Be Told podcast. I'm Sheddy.
I'm Shabs.
And this is season 3. Do you remember, Shabs, when we first started this? And I know it feels like forever ago, but we were on our first one thinking, oh, this is, you know, going to be a really interesting journey at how far we've come. And
Yeah. You
forget, you just keep recording, you look back. And someone actually said to me, someone was talking about our podcast and they said, I'll give it a listen because I don't, my partner listens to crime, but I don't.
Yeah.
And then they sent me a message and they said, you've got loads of episodes. And it's something I've not looked back at because I have them in files and clearly some of our episodes have been in part one and part two. So I don't see it because we see them in folders, not as in parts as well, because with the parts on top, it adds up to quite a lot. So the fact that we're on season 3, we're going quite strong. And I thought, I'm not going to talk massively at the intro for this one, but I do want to talk. We will talk in a bit of detail towards the end. I say detail, there's a lot of media. I'm surprised I hadn't heard of it before. I wanted to do something that was less usual to people. It's interesting I say that. It's not one of the common ones. Certainly, I don't think you've heard of it. But it is one of the less common ones. Very interesting.
I always like when we cover ones that people have forgotten about or, like, are not in the media as much. I mean, all the ones that are in the media are interesting.
Yeah.
And I do, like, say, you know, like, I do want to cover, like, Charles Manson at some point. And obviously there's a lot of literature there.
Yeah.
But sometimes just hearing these little bizarre cases that you never knew existed.
Well, with this one, it's very famous according to online. There's lots and lots and lots of media, though. You'll see at the end, I'll literally read through some of the books and films that have been adapted, you know, based on this true story. I'd never heard of it.
Really?
And I'm going to apologise in advance because there's words in here that the pronunciation is French. I don't know if I'm slurring that or not. And
Sorry,
go on.
I was going to say, you might hear me giggling in the back when you're pronouncing these French
because
words.
Because I went online and I know one or two of the words I generally know from my French back in high school, how to pronounce them. But most of the ones, even probably the name of the sisters, I am probably pronouncing wrong. I'm going to read it phonetically. I'm putting that disclaimer out now and I apologise for that. So please, my sincerest apologies if I am destroying the language.
No trolls, please. You can't speak French. We know we can't speak French.
So, it's one that we want to really kick into and get going on. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I'm very interested because I don't know anything about this one. You've not even told me the name of it, so...
So am I going to have to introduce my own today?
Ooh, go on.
Yeah, so this is season 3, episode 1, and it's the Papin Sisters.
Feel like a listener.
On the night of February 2nd, 1933, on a quiet street in Le Mans, France, the bodies of Leonie Lancelin and her daughter Genevieve were found in their locked home, hideously mutilated. There was no question from the very beginning that the murderers were the family maids, the sisters Christine and Leah Papin. But the account of the murders and the trial that followed created a firestorm of publicity in France. It appears that the murder of the Lancelins was not the only tragedy in this story, but that the life of the Papin sisters was a deeply unhappy one that may have led, at least indirectly, to these horrific crimes. Christine and Leah were the second and third daughters of Clemence Deray and Gustave Papin in Le Mans, France. Their home life was hardly ideal. Clemence was an unfit mother and Gustave was a violently abusive alcoholic. Even before they married, not long before the birth of their eldest daughter Amelia in 1902, Gustave believed that Clemence was having an affair with her employer, and when he announced that they would be moving away from Le Mans, Clemence threatened to commit suicide rather than leave. They stayed in Le Mans but could not be considered a well-functioning family. Shortly after Christine's birth in 1905, she was handed over to her paternal aunt and uncle to be raised. And when Leah was born in 1911, she was taken in by her maternal uncle until his death. At the age of 10, their older sister, Amelia, accused their father of raping her, and instead of believing her, their mother accused her of seducing her father and sent her to the Bonpaster Catholic Orphanage, where she was soon joined by her two younger sisters. This orphanage was not a refuge, but rather was notorious for its mistreatment of the children who were under its care. Meanwhile, Clemence and Gustav divorced around 1913, a very unusual move in French society at the time. When she turned 18, Amelia chose to become a nun, and as far as we know, spent the rest of her life in a convent. A few years later, Christine also wanted to enter a convent, but Clemence would not give permission, instead insisting that she became a maid so that she could support her mother. Leah too became a maid, and when she was old enough, and the two sisters worked in several different homes in Le Mans. The orphanage had trained the girls in household arts such as cooking, cleaning, and needlework, so they had no difficulty in obtaining positions. Despite the 7-year gap in their ages, the two sisters were extremely close and happiest when together. They moved from one employer to the next at the insistence of Clemence, who was not satisfied with the wages that the sisters received. In 1926, Christine was hired by the well-off Lancelin family. René Lancelin was a retired solicitor, and with his wife Leonie and younger daughter Genevieve, lived in a spacious townhouse in Le Mans. Their older daughter had married and lived elsewhere in the town. In the beginning, Christine's work, especially her skills in needlework and cooking, were praised by her new employers. She and Leah preferred to work together, and after a few months' employment as a family's cook, she was able to convince the Lancelins to also hire Leah as a chambermaid so that they could be reunited. They lived in a comfortable heated room in the attic and were well fed, so all seemed to be going well for the sisters in their new employment. They attended church regularly and were known to be honest and hard-working. They maintained contact with their mother until around 1931, when they had a falling out over money. Although Clemence continued to write to them in an attempt to reach out to them, the sisters did not respond. Still, life in the Lancelin household was hardly ideal. As for the normal domestic service at the time, the women worked 14-hour days with a half day off each week and were held to extremely high standards by their employers. As the years went on, Leonie especially would closely inspect their work. For instance, running a white glove across surfaces to see if they had been adequately cleaned, and berating them if they had not completed tasks to her satisfaction. Apparently, over the years, Leonie had become increasingly violent, on occasion hitting the sisters' heads off the walls when she felt they hadn't done their work properly. It is believed that she herself may have suffered from a severe depression that deepened as time went on, and Papin's sisters were convenient targets to take her unhappiness out on. Meanwhile, they had no contact whatsoever with René Lancelin, the head of the household. In 7 years, it appears that he had never spoken to the two maids who lived and worked in his home. Instead, Leonie communicated her orders to Christine and Leah in writing. The sisters accepted the poor treatment without complaint, instead maintaining a docile and subservient manner with their employers. They were quiet and withdrawn, interacting only with each other and apparently content with their lot in life. It is likely that after being raised first by neglectful and abusive parents and then placed in a notoriously hard orphanage, that they considered this to simply be the life they could expect. But even they could be pushed too far, with catastrophic consequences. Christine and Leah had worked in a Lancelin home for 7 years, when the dam of their lifelong mistreatment at the hands of all they knew burst wide open. On February 2nd, 1933, started out as a normal day in the Lancelin household. Renee and Leonie, as well as their daughter Genevieve, who still lived at home, were planning to attend dinner at the home of a friend. Meanwhile, Christine and Leah pursued their normal daily activities in the household. There is some dispute as to how the altercation that led to the murder of the Lancelin women started. It is known that Leonie and Genevieve returned home unexpectedly after a day of shopping to find the house plunged into darkness. Some accounts say that an electric iron that had been not repaired properly was plugged in and it tripped the fuse, while others say that Christine claimed to have urinated into an outlet. Christine herself stated in court that the faulty iron was the catalyst of the conflict that ended so tragically. And from her previous pattern of behaviour, it seems unlikely that Leonie would have needed as extreme an action as the supposed urination to lose her temper with her usually docile maids. Whatever the cause, Leonie flew into an uncontrollable rage and started to physically attack Christine and Leah on the stair landing. Pushed too far, they fought back. Christine snatched up a pewter pot that stood at the top of the stairs and hit Leonie on the head with it. Genevieve joined in to defend her mother, and Christine gouged the young woman's eyes out in retaliation, and then ordered Leah to do the same to her mother. Leonie's eyeballs were later found in the scarf she wore around her neck. Meanwhile, Christine ran down to the kitchen and returned with a knife and hammer to finish what they had started. They were not content just to kill Leonie and Genevieve. Their pent-up rage led them to mutilate the bodies as they lay on the landing, taking 2 hours to complete the job. Long after their victims were dead, in an uncontrolled fury, they slashed the women's chest, genitals, legs and buttocks and smashed their faces beyond recognition. You might expect that the murderers would flee the scene of the crime after committing such bloody horrors, but Christine and Leah did nothing of the sort. Instead, they retreated to the attic room, stripped themselves naked and curled up in bed awaiting whatever would follow. The hammer they used in the gruesome murders lay on a chair near them, the hair and blood of their victim still clinging to it. Meanwhile, Renee turned up at their friend's house expecting to find his wife and daughter already there for dinner, but of course they had never arrived. Concerned, he and his son-in-law returned to the house around 7 p.m. to find all the doors locked, and in darkness aside from a single light in the Papin's attic room. Unable to get in, he went to the police station and returned with officers who climbed over the garden walls and gained entry. Finding the mutilated bodies of Leonie and Genevieve on the stair landing, the walls and stairs surrounding them soaked with blood. Christine and Leah were found naked in their bed, covered with their victim's blood, and they immediately confessed to the crime, claiming it was self-defense. Leah said, "It was her or us. From now on, I am deaf and dumb." They were taken into custody and placed in separate cells, which was extremely upsetting to both of them. Once, over the month before the trial, they were allowed to meet and flew into each other's arms. Christine began to unbutton her blouse and said, "Please say yes." This led some to believe that the two sisters had an incestuous sexual relationship. Christine's behaviour in prison continued to be erratic, and in July of 1933, she attempted to gouge out her own eyes. She was then placed in a straitjacket. A day later, she claimed to the investigating magistrate that she had committed the murders while under the thrall of a similar fit, and that Leah had not participated. However, the magistrate discounted this statement since Leah had already confessed to a role in the murders. The trial of the Papin sisters took place in September 1933. Not surprisingly for such a bloody murder, the trial was followed closely in the French press. The sisters were labelled Monsters of Le Mans, Lambs Who Became Wolves, and the Raging Sheep. While nobody, including the Papins, denied that the sisters had committed the crimes, there was some sympathy from left-wing intellectuals for Christine and Leah based on the circumstances of their life. Their lawyer pleaded not guilty on the basis of insanity, and the demeanour of the sisters in court seemed to bear that out. They stared straight ahead, avoiding eye contact with others. Psychologists concluded that they suffered from folie à deux, or shared paranoid disorder. As a result of their traumatic lives and social isolation, it was also observed that Leah was dominated by Christine and unable to make decisions for herself. However, three psychologists appointed by the court concluded that they were fit to stand trial and had no more than a normal sibling relationship. In court, the sisters did not deny that they had committed these horrific acts. Christine said in her opening statement, quote, "When the lady returned, I informed her that the iron was broken again and that she had not been able to iron. She, being Leonie, wanted to jump on us, my sister and I. When I saw her, I jumped in her face and I gouged out her eyes with my fingers. We shouldn't have attacked Mrs. Genevieve. At that time, Leah jumped on the lady and also ripped off her eyes. When we had done this, I immediately went down to the kitchen and I went to get a knife and hammer. With this, my sister and I were fierce on our two patrons. I had no hatred of them, but I didn't like the gesture that the lady made that afternoon towards me," end quote. Leah later testified that, quote, "When the lady raised her arms over me, I was afraid that she would exert violence on me and my sister, as she had done before. One day, she, being Leonie, noticed a piece of paper on the ground. She grabbed my arm and kept pinching me and forced me to kneel down," end quote. The continuing influence of their mother also came up in court, as Leah and Clemence told her, quote, "If that was repeated and it was necessary to defend herself," end quote. In the end, according to Christine, it came down to this, quote, "I'd rather have our bosses' hides than for them to have had ours," end quote. The jury took only 40 minutes of deliberation to find the two sisters guilty of their crimes, but did not think that Leah was as capable as her older sister. Christine was sentenced to death by guillotine, and Leah received a sentence of 10 years hard labour for her role in the murders. Christine's death sentence was later commuted to life in prison. The aftermath. Christine was no more stable after being sentenced than before. She continued to suffer in prison, separated from her sister. Although she wrote many letters pleading to be reunited with Leah, she was refused, and her mental condition deteriorated further. Eventually, she refused to eat and was transferred to a mental institution in a last-ditch attempt by authorities to keep her alive. But she died of self-inflicted starvation in 1937, never seeing her sister again. Leah lived much longer than Christine, and in fact, there is some question as to when she actually died. We do know that she was released 2 years earlier because of her good behaviour in prison. In 1941, when France was occupied by Germany during World War II, she moved to Nantes, a few hours from her hometown of Le Mans. She earned a living as a hotel maid for many years, using a false name to avoid the notoriety of her earlier life. Interestingly, she lived with her mother, who would have been the only dominant female figure left in her life. She probably was not really capable of living without strong guidance from another person. After the circumstances of her upbringing and early adulthood, most people who met her concluded that she had limited intelligence and was easily led by others. In the late 60s, Leah was interviewed by a reporter from Francois and showed her the pictures of Christine that she still treasured, and the trunk full of dresses that she and her sister had sewn for themselves over the years. She believed that the Christine spirit appeared to her in apparitions and that Christine was then in heaven. She wanted to return to Lamar to see her sister Amelia, who was still living as a religious life as a nun, but probably never succeeded in that goal. While some accounts have Leah dying in 1984, the documentary filmmaker Claude Ventura claims that he found her living in a hospice in 2000 and that she passed away at the age of 80 the following year. She is buried next to her mother in Nantes.
So that was a particularly intense case, wasn't it?
Isn't it really weird that even though yourself and I, we don't actually liaison what we're writing.
Mm.
We tend to say we're going to say a murder or a crime. We haven't done a horror one in a while, which we need to do, I think. But the fact that back to back, we're talking about people, siblings, having this weird connection, yet yeah. we managed to do a random one that involved in the end of season two, if you remember.
Yeah, so I did the Erickson twins with the Folie à Deux, and as soon as you said the Folie à Deux, I thought,
that's
we both
twice.
Chose a very similar, well, not similar in what happened, but like it's yeah. a bit of a coincidence.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
We've both chosen
cases
where it's to do with sisters.
Yeah. And like I mentioned, I mean, I mentioned it early on, but like I mentioned at the start, I hadn't heard of this one before.
I've never heard of it.
There's so much. I've only picked a few areas where I've looked at where they've involved them in the media. And there's films called Murderous Maids. There's one, a documentary called I'm Searching the Papin Sisters, I think. I'll check that one up. And there's a book called The Papin Sisters by Rachel Edwards as well. But when I talk about it being in the media, honestly, there's literally reams of documentaries and series and TVs that were specifically dedicated or based around the Papin Sisters.
I mean, it happened very early on in the century, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. So I'll even name through a few. I'm just going to have a look if I can see a few more, because I was looking into this in a fair bit of details about further reading and where they were in the media. If I can pull them up, I just want to see if I can find.
Okay, while you're doing that, I'm
you
just
do that.
Gonna kind of speak about what I think about it, because this is the first time I heard about it. And I just, did it ever figure out why they did it? Was it a class issue?
They just snap.
Or?
No, from what I gather, they just, we don't know what the situation, there's lots of pictures of the Papin sister online anyway, but we don't know the situation because clearly they had a really, really bad childhood. When I was reading into it, there was one dominant sister over the other, which you can see because the other sister had limited capabilities, which they figure out later on, certainly when they're separate. They probably looked out for each other quite a long time. Well, we don't know because judging by the story being told that the house, the owner, the wife in particular, progressively became more aggressive toward them.
Yeah.
So, you know, people all have a point where they're going to snap, right?
I think for me, it's always when you, obviously the listeners can't see me, but whenever you talked about people gouging their eyes out, I was mortified.
Yeah.
Something about when people attack people's eyes that just really, really, really,
it's just,
I know.
But the fact that they went back and then they went down and got hammers and
carried
on.
It's all very planned to me.
Yeah, just literally, just decided to snap. But then not even run away then. They literally, you know.
But did they snap then? Because it was very planned. They planned and said the iron wasn't working. They didn't run away after. So did they actually snap or was this more premeditated?
Who knows? I mean, I'm just picking out a few more films here. There was Sister, My Sister in 1994 by Nancy Meckler. There was The Maids, which is a film in 1975, which is a British film. Then The Murderous Maids, which I mentioned, which is a 2000 film. Yeah. They're three of the films. And the books, there's so much further reading on this. There's books that are in French. And there are books that are in English. But it's like, literally, I mean, I only picked out three because there are pages and pages of media that are on these sisters. So they're quite prominent out there. And I was doing a bit of research into the sister that lived on, and it's really weird because she lived a long life, and they showed, like, there's pictures of her growing older that they think is her, and it wasn't until very recently that she actually died. Or if they think that she died, they just... They say she died and they have buried her. There's a lot, it's shrouded in a lot of mystery as well.
But she was never involved, was she, in the murder?
She was.
In the murders.
Both the sisters were.
No, the older sister.
They both were.
No, I thought you said she had another sister.
No, you're talking about Amelia. Amelia. Amelia was a nun. Amelia was a nun who spent her whole life in a convent.
But she wasn't involved.
She was irrelevant.
Was
she was irrelevant to the story completely. No,
Sorry, I thought when you said the older sister, I thought you meant
No, Amelia. I meant after the two. Yeah. So I think with one of them passing away, I'm talking about the murderer, the sister that committed the murderer. So essentially, she's lived, I think it was, she lived, Leah, I think it was, she lived a really long time. And if you really do your research and have a little read, even on Wikipedia, have a little read, or go into the article to have a read, it's a fascinating story.
So did she, nothing happened after that when they were separated?
No.
So it's very similar to the Erikson twins.
Well, Christine, clearly, she'd killed herself in the end, in a very similar fashion.
But then nothing happened with Leah after?
Nope.
See, it's very similar in
very
that
similar.
Respect that when they lead separate lives, or obviously one died, or killed herself. But
Leah was didn't do much of a sentence. She was released, and then she went under a hidden name, and
nothing happened.
Nothing
she didn't go on to kill anybody else.
No, not at all.
So it is a thing of when they were together.
Yeah, it's really odd.
How weird, and it's really, really odd how we both chose very similar stuff. We might want to murder
crazy
tomorrow.
Let's not do something crazy.
Hopefully
But
not.
I think it's a long one. I don't want to talk about all the media that's around it. There's plenty out there for you
to
read.
I'm going to look into it.
Certainly want to read up into it. It's quite free. There's plenty of pictures of the sisters out there. So the older pictures, you can see them as they grow older and stuff like that. So there's a lot of information. Clearly, there were problems in childhood, which there always is. There's always that sort of issue. The issue with mum who just cared about money, didn't want to, you know, second daughter to go into convent because she wanted to make money as a housemaid. They were clearly very good, obedient housemaids, but you know how situations are in them days. It can be quite horrific, right? So there's a lot going on. But I think definitely have a read on it, have a look at the information, and we'll make change and have a look at maybe doing... I might do a crime-related one at some point. Or horror-based one. But,
It's been a while. We've done a lot of
murders
at the moment.
Is that okay?
Yeah, thank you for that. I think we'll call it quits there.
We will. So, I'm Sheddy.
I'm Shabs.
Ciao for now.
We'll see you on the next episode.